You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Health, a constant voice during the uncertainty and evolution of the pandemic. As California officially ends its state of emergency declaration, nearly 3 years since it was put into effect, Dr. Blumberg and I spent time reflecting on all that has developed since 2020. We're picking up with a significant marker, the development of vaccines. About a year later, you know, we started to have the development of vaccines in a widespread fashion. But I mean, it was a bumpy rollout, to say the least. It wasn't as efficient as many people had hoped. I mean, you acknowledged this, but you also expressed some optimism when you joined us on Insight in March of 2021. So we're going to listen to a clip of that about the challenges in rolling out vaccines and the threat of variants.
I think it has been confusing, the rollout, and that's because, you know, we really didn't have any sort of practice with this, and it's an unprecedented situation. Hopefully those glitches will be resolved, and hopefully we'll have vaccine available more widely. And I expect more wide availability of vaccine. I think things are looking up. The only wild card really is the variants.
Yeah, and we'll get to variants and wild cards in just a moment. But talk to us about vaccines and how, despite the challenges of the rollout in the initial months, they helped really change the trajectory of the pandemic.
I know for many people, once you got vaccinated, you just felt more powerful because you felt more protected. So it was a really good feeling to get that first dose of the vaccine. And, you know, as a public health measure for the community, you know, that's the ticket out of the pandemic, really, because you can't get rid of the social distancing when there's not widespread community immunity because there hadn't been that much infection. You know, otherwise you'd end up overwhelming hospitals and hospital beds would be just totally filled and there'd be no capacity for people who are sick. It'd be a disaster. And that's what we know was seen in some countries, in Italy and Iran, in India and several other areas, where people were dying because they couldn't be seen in the hospital. They were running out of oxygen canisters. So the vaccine was the way to have a soft landing for that. And, you know, it was really unfortunate that the vaccines end up being politicized. And it's still hard for me to wrap my head around that because much of it was on political lines. And yet the last administration, they really took the lead in providing support to develop the vaccines, and somehow it became a partisan issue, which doesn't really make that much sense to me. I mean, that should have been a real triumph of the last administration and then the current administration continuing to support vaccines. But really, we saw this also in China, where they had the zero COVID policy, which has its advantages. They really did do a great job containing COVID, but it came at a huge societal cost. During that time of the zero COVID policy, they really had an opportunity to get effective vaccines into their population, into the most vulnerable. And unfortunately, they didn't succeed in that. And so when they abandoned the zero COVID policy, that did result in some preventable deaths occurring.
You know, given that there's always been people who steer clear of vaccines for a myriad of reasons, but what I'm hearing from you is, have you experienced this type of hesitancy to this level in your career?
You know, and we have had vaccine hesitancy since the development of vaccines. For hundreds of years, there's been vaccine hesitancy, and it has been getting worse over the past few years. But really, with COVID vaccination, it's really reached a peak. And a lot of that is because of the social media being able to amplify these messages. And in addition to the vaccine messages, of course, we still have people who are talking about ivermectin as if that's working, even though we've had several high-quality scientific studies really debunking the use of ivermectin. So yeah, the medical misinformation is still a problem.
Hmm. With the hindsight that we have now, how do you understand the choice that some people made to not get vaccinated? Maybe they're vaccinated for other vaccines, but because it was under emergency use authorization, which is not full FDA approval, and that really factored into people's decision-making.
Yeah, you know, and it's difficult to public message that. So that's an issue. I think it's easier to message on a one-to-one basis about the emergency use approval. I mean, at this point, we've had billions of doses administered around the world. But, you know, one of the issues is to talk about that, is to talk about the experience that was had, the scrutiny, the availability of the data. The FDA did an excellent job of making sure that all the data on the vaccines was publicly available on the websites when they were having their meetings and having their discussions. And I would often refer people to that if they did have questions. And then in addition to that, I think just, you know, knowing that individual people have individual questions, so it's not a one size fit all. It's not just one message that can be given that's going to satisfy everybody.
What did the past 3 years teach you about how to talk to people, whether patients or just your own friends and loved ones, and go over concerns?
I think on a public health level, it's clear and consistent messaging. And we've known that before, and we continue to know that. And we haven't always had that from authority figures, you know, especially from politicians and others in authority. And on an individual level, I think we really do need to be able to respond to individual concerns. So you can't just say, get the vaccine. You know, you have to, if people are reluctant, you have to say, well, what specific thing are you concerned about? Because different people are concerned about different things. And then there's also the issue of COVID and severity of infection. For the vast majority of people who get COVID, it will be a mild infection and will be an outpatient illness. They'll recover and they won't have consequences. But for some people, it will be severe. It will result in hospitalization. It might result in death. And even people who have a mild infection might have long-term consequences, such as long COVID. And so I think it's important for people to realize that there's more than one reason to be vaccinated.
I'm going to play another soundbite from you. And this was from July of 2021. And we were discussing the emergent of the first wildcard of a variant, the first big one for that matter, which was Delta variant. But before we dove into the science, I checked in on you just to see how Dr. Blumberg was doing. And so here's the beginning of our conversation in July of 2021. Dr. Blumberg, I think the first time I interviewed you on COVID was January of 2020. I just want to check in and get a sanity check. How are you doing?
Oh my God, January 2020. I can't believe that it's been that long. It's hard to believe what we thought way back then when we weren't wearing masks, where we were looking for a handful of cases and where we thought you could only get it if you traveled and we had the travel restrictions just starting. So we've come a long way since then. It's a completely different world, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, and we're still talking about it right now. And you mentioned those things, you know, just a few moments ago. But I bring that up because it was a relentless time and arguably still is. Do you ever give yourself opportunities to pause and reflect, you know, practice self-care? And if so, how?
One of the things about the pandemic for me, my pandemic experience, is that I was not socially isolated. I came into work almost every single day. I was in the office. I could do that because I do have a private office. So our administrative rules in non-clinical areas was it's okay to come to work. You don't have to telecommute as long as you can close the door. And so I did that. And then, of course, I worked in the hospital and saw patients. I had more interactions during the pandemic than I think I did without the pandemic occurring. So I felt very well connected to people, more connected than ever at work, at least, not with other social activities. And, you know, it was also personally, it was immensely gratifying because I felt like really productive on an individual level. I was taking care of patients and on an administrative level, working on policies and trying to increase vaccination rates. So, you know, when I came home every day, I felt very gratified and so fortunate to be in the field and that I was in and to have the experiences that I was in. So it just felt like I was in the right place at the right time to provide some good out there and to really help people. So, you know, my experience was a lot different than many others' experiences.
Yeah, obviously, healthcare professionals like yourself and thousands more throughout California have been those frontline heroes during the pandemic. I guess when it comes to the burnout that many health professionals are experiencing at medical centers and hospitals, I mean, what can be done to help alleviate the stress and everything that they've shouldered over the last 3 years and counting?
Yeah, there has been a lot of burnout, and some of that is related to other changes that have been occurring in healthcare. So many of the medical healthcare professionals are really frustrated with a lot of issues related to electronic health record, which has so many advantages, but some of the documentation requirements are onerous and lead to people getting frustrated. So there's a lot of that going on, a lot of billing issues, insurance issues that get in the way of patient care. And some of the rules just seem arbitrary to healthcare professionals as well as patients, that we really want to make sure patients get the care that they need. And yet there's barriers out there that are very difficult to overcome. I think one of the issues that we're appreciating is that some of the issues for medical healthcare professionals can't be taken care of with a lot of the wellness things that are out there, with like taking a deep breath or doing a yoga class or something like that. We need structural changes in the healthcare system so that we're not asking people to increase their resilience, but instead making the job better, making the job easier, making it easier for us to take care of patients. And so I'm seeing some of that been realized by the higher ups, and also the increase in the change just with the age of people entering the healthcare profession, having more boundaries in terms of what they're willing to do and not willing to do. And they're not willing to work overtime for free, so to speak. And that helps with their self-care. So that's a positive thing. Those kind of changes, I think, are needed.
Yeah, in many ways, it's a completely different world, more than a year after the pandemic began, and now more than 3 years, or marking 3 years since the pandemic began, in terms of people reevaluating their lives and especially their work-life balance and what they want out of their jobs. How do you think the pandemic changed everyday life, and which changes do you believe will be lasting?
Yeah, one of the things I'm hoping is that the masking continues, voluntary masking in public. You know, this occurs in many Asian communities and has for years. And I got one upper respiratory tract infection over the past 3 years. And that's not many for me, because I'm usually like in kids' faces a lot who are sick. So, you know, I think masking works really well. And we've got scientific studies to prove that not only did masks work and prevent COVID, but they also prevented influenza and other common community associated respiratory infections. So I'm hopeful that's a positive outcome from the pandemic. The development of the COVID tests were good. Now we're getting development of over-the-counter flu tests also. The reason both of those are useful is that we know that if people want, they can get treatment for influenza or for COVID, antiviral treatment that is effective and will help you recover faster and decreased risk of serious infection. So if you can diagnose yourself and get that prescription from your healthcare provider, you can get better faster without even going to the office. So that's an advantage. And then the other issue is the increase in our Zoom use and hybrid meetings and all that. That's been a boon in several areas. So for example, here at UC Davis with the hospital, you know, we have several in-person meetings, but now that we have hybrid meetings, we can have people go to meetings and then join remotely if they're not coming to work that day. Or for example, if they're on the main campus, they can join the meeting. And that's useful for everybody. So it's useful for us to get input from like a lot of the people on the main campus in the veterinary medicine area that have some common overlaps with human medicine. You know, they can join us on our discussion of infectious diseases. That's been great.
Collectively, do you think we'll be better prepared if something similar, another pandemic, arises in the near future?
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I think we are better prepared now. But the danger to me is the backsliding that may occur as we move farther and farther away from the pandemic. So if, for example, the next pandemic is 20 years from now, you know, in the meantime, the risk is that people will become complacent and there will be more cuts to public health next time there's a budget crisis. And that's not going to serve us well in the future. That's the main thing I worry about.
Finally, Dr. Blumberg, we invite you back here on Inside a Year from today. So February of 2024, what do you hope we'll be discussing, talking about when it comes to COVID-19?
you know, my hope is that it will become endemic. It will become similar to influenza. The variants won't be that important. They'll be like a little bit interesting, but they won't be dramatic. And that we will settle into a seasonal pattern with COVID so that we can do what we do with influenza and get one seasonal booster every year instead of this, you know, 4 to 6 month booster, which we've had. And just, you know, nobody's up for that. That's just not feasible.
Dr. Blumberg, thank you so much for the time over the last 3 years.
Thank you for so much for having me, for getting the word out, and for taking a walk down memory lane.
That is Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Health, who shared his reflections on the pandemic over the last 3 years as California's state of emergency comes to an end. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.